Hello, and welcome to the Empowerography Podcast. This is a platform created for women's voices to be heard and a place to share their stories, journeys, and successes with the world for the purpose of helping other women who might be on similar journeys. We are empowering women one episode at a time. I'm your host, Brad Walsh, so kick back, grab one of your favorite beverages, and enjoy the stories. The world needs to hear your message and your story, so don't deny the world of that gift within you that the universe has given you. Someone out there needs to hear your story because it will support them in feeling hope, inspired, and even transformed. Do you want to discover how I help get my clients out of their own way, show up, and confidently share their message? I would love to extend an invitation to you to join me in my free masterclass, Start Your Own Podcast from Idea to Implementation, on Wednesday, April 5th at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can find the registry link in the show notes. Hope to see you there. Hello there, Brad Walsh here, your host of the Empowerography Podcast. Today, my guest is Bevan Farrand. She is an executive coach, a speaker, an author, the founder of the Take the Damn Chance movement, and the creator of the Do the Damn Thing method, and last but certainly not least, a mother. Welcome, Bevan. How are you? I am so grateful to have you here.
I am so honored to be here. And yeah, I like to say the word damn a lot. So anytime somebody, especially when I'm on stage and I'm like doing at a banking conference, I'm like, I wonder how they're going to do when they have to say damn seven times in 30 seconds.
I love it. Well, thank you for taking and making the time to be here with me today. I'm so excited to have you here and so looking forward to jumping in and sharing about all the beautiful light you put out into the world through all the damn things you do.
Well, thank you. I can't wait. Let's do it. Let's do the damn thing.
All right. With that being said, that is a hell of a lot of hats you wear and quite a resume. So first of all, I'd like to know, how do you prioritize and how important is prioritization and organization to you?
Oh, I'm looking around my house that is just completely unorganized right now. And I used to be a project manager, so that's always kind of funny to me. I think that we all go through different seasons in our life where we have the capacity for more organization, more specific prioritization. And I'm not in one of those seasons right now. I have three kids under the age of seven. I mean, we're treading water a lot of times, but I'm okay with that. And I give myself that grace of, okay, this is the season that I'm in right now. When it comes to prioritization, so one of the things I teach in the Do the Damn Thing method, like the core of it is where you find your damn manifesto, which is your yes and your six-dimensional why. And when we can find our yes, that's our top priority. And when everything's a priority, nothing is. And so when we find our top priority, I think rather than me trying to rank prioritize things, it's I know what my yes is in the different areas of my life. I know what it is in my work. I know what it is in my parenting, my family. And that is, if I only can get one thing done, that's it. And everything else can come. But whenever I have a question of, okay, I have limited time, then I can hold it up to, again, I call it your damn manifesto, but like I can hold it up to my yes and say, is this in service of it? And if it's not, then it can be a no. And if it is, then I can move it forward.
Beautiful. I love it. Now, wearing multiple hats as you do and being a multidisciplinary, I would love to know, what does your morning routine look like? Or if you even have one.
I know. I'm like, I'm the opposite. Everyone you interview is probably, well, I do these 17 steps and I don't like mornings. And so I am. And so right now, I mean, again, three kids. And so everybody listening is going to be like, when I say this. So my two oldest kids are 5 and 7 and they get up earlier than I do. And so it's true. They do.
All right.
So they're allowed, when they come in, they're allowed to watch their iPad, watch some shows until my youngest, who's 2, gets up. Because the way I look at it is, I really honestly cannot believe I'm admitting all of this. I look at it as there's no reason for all of us to be up until the baby is up because she cannot manage it on herself. But my 7-year-old, who is now, I mean, she loves to take on more and more responsibility. So sometimes she'll be like, can I go get us a morning snack? And I'm like, sure. So she goes down and she brings up some cereal, like just some dry cereal or a granola bar for her and her brother. So that's my first morning routine, is that everybody sleeps in as long as possible. But then really, my mornings truly are about my kids. Up until December, we had a nanny. She was with us for over 4 years. And now she went to be a stay-at-home mom. And so it's just me and the kids in the morning. And so I don't put a lot of pressure on myself or on us to get through a bunch of hoops. And so it really is, we're up, we're getting dressed, we're getting breakfast, we're getting ready for school. And on the weekends, we can stretch that out. Maybe we're making pancakes. But what has been a shift for me, this is totally foreign, is that now I don't have a nanny. I don't have childcare in the morning. So I'm actually with my two littlest kids until my son goes to school. I now am trying to do my work between 1:30 and 6. And so my morning has stretched, and my morning routine, my morning focus right now is being willing to be present in the moment with whatever I'm doing. And that means trying to straddle, oh, I should be working while I'm also pouring cereal. And that's my learning right now, is really leaning into that.
That's a lot.
It's a lot.
Kids, I mean, that's the biggest responsibility there is, being a parent. And that has to take front and center. But of course, you also have to take front and center, I think actually more so than the kids, in the way that you've got to pour into your cup and fill your cup first. Because if you don't, you're not present for your kids. So you are the top priority.
Yeah, I think we have to remember that. I think that I want to tell this story because, so I'm a solo parent, which I know we haven't gotten to that part of the story yet, but the other night when we talk about making ourselves a priority, part of the way that I do that and the way that I know I can do that is I'm an over communicator, but I'm actually also an over communicator with my kids. And so the other day we were driving home from gymnastics, my son left his iPads, so we had to turn around and go back, and it's like, that's it, it's not yours anymore, all these things. So we got home and we're getting ready for bed. And I said to my kids, I said, look, I need to be really honest with you guys right now. Ever since our nanny was named Julie, we called her Juju. Ever since Juju left, mommy does everything. She does the laundry. She does the food. She makes sure you guys get your lunches and your dinners, and we get to gymnastics and all these things around the house. And I'm going to be really honest, it's really hard. And I could really use your help.
Yeah.
And my daughter, who's 7, my oldest, came up and she goes, mommy, can I do something? And I said, sure. And she just gave me the biggest hug. And first of all, she has empathy far exceeding her years. But I think a lot of us who are parents feel like we can't share that with our kids, or we wait until we're like, don't you understand how hard it is? And I've had those moments too. But when we can share, and it's not just, I'm not just asking for help from other adults, but I'm asking my kids to be involved, and I'm asking them to take care of me and my emotion. You know what I mean? They're not changing my clothes for me, but that they're participating and making sure that everyone in the family is taken care of.
For sure.
I think that is how we have to take care of ourselves. We have to be honest about what we need. We need to be willing for it to maybe look a little different. And then we need to ask for it and keep asking.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. There's nothing wrong with a kid. I mean, they're young. They can only do so much.
But
there's
nothing wrong.
There's nothing wrong with them contributing what they can, what they're capable of.
Yeah. Right? Well, and so my 7-year-old will sometimes, she'll be the one to get my, well, actually they both like to do it, to get my youngest out of the crib or pick out clothes, or now they're all picking out their own outfits. And so here's a good example. They're all picking their own outfits. And I have to decide, okay, am I going to get all up in arms about the fact that they're mixing a lot of patterns and a lot of colors? And maybe it's not what I would have picked. Or am I just going to empower them to say, okay, cool. Like sometimes I'll say, are you sure?
You might want to think about that one.
And my 7-year-old is, no, I think I look good. And I'm like, all right, get it, girl. Because
there you go. I love it. It's that empowerment piece, empowering them to have the power to make the decisions
right
for what they want to wear. as funky as it may look.
Yeah. And sometimes it's for what they want to eat. Now, every once in a while, I need to step in and be like, you have not had protein all day. And my kids are really good about picking fruit. So they always say, okay, I'm going to have one healthy snack and then something from the pantry. But again, just trying to say, I often say this is not the hill I'm going to die on today. Your socks
for sure
and what they look like are not the hill I'm going to die on today.
It's not worth it.
No.
You want to wear mismatched socks? Go right ahead. That's okay.
My daughter's new thing is her soccer socks pulled up to her thighs every day.
Oh, and
I'm like, all right, if that's going to be your thing,
go for it.
Yeah.
Bevan, what were you doing before you made the jump into entrepreneurship? And what was the catalyst for that shift for you into the entrepreneurial world?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the most recent shift because I tried to be an entrepreneur back in 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. And I don't like to say I failed, but we'll just say it was not successful.
Right.
And so this most recent shift to entrepreneurship was in 2019. And the catalyst was that I lost my job. And it was the third time I had lost my job in under 10 years. I thought I was going in for a promotion, thought I was going to be promoted to the COO actually, and lost my job instead. And at that point, I said to my husband, I don't want to put the financial health of our family into the hands of any one person ever again. Because when you lose a job, you lose all your income, like in a split second. But as an entrepreneur, I thought, well, if I lose a client, then that's a percentage of my income, but I have time to build it back up. That was really that catalyst. And so up until that point, I had spent a little over a decade maybe in the digital marketing space as a launch manager, a senior project manager, a brand director. And what I decided to do at that point was take everything I had been doing and use it to support small businesses and entrepreneurs in growing their business. And that was the business I started called Collaborate.work. And that business I grew over the course of 18 months, I grew that to $300,000.
Wow.
And in the middle of going through some really difficult things too. And then I shifted over to this Take the Damn Chance movement, really pouring my heart and soul and passion into it. And that business I grew from zero to $300,000 in 24 months while taking a 3-month maternity leave, because yes, I think that entrepreneurs should be able to do that. So that was really it. Was the catalyst was losing my job. And if people are listening and they're thinking about what would I do as an entrepreneur, I mean, I just took everything I'd been doing and was really good at. And then I used it for clients instead of a corporation.
Well, you hear people say that all the time when you talk to them about entrepreneurship, that they haven't taken that leap yet. I don't know what I would do. I don't know what business I would start. That's a common thing, right? And then, of course, there's the other side of it where there's fear and I don't want to leave my golden handcuffs. I don't want to leave the corporate job and the security and all of the things. It's very common, both of those things.
Yeah, I have something for each of them. So one of them, again, so the Damn Manifesto that I teach, it's one of the things is that we've forgotten how to dream like children. And so we say, oh, I don't know what I would do. And it's because you're dreaming like an editor and you're thinking, oh, I really want it for me. I really want to be a keynote speaker, but it would be really hard to do it this way. Or I really want to write a book, but what if it doesn't sell? And so the very first step when you're uncovering your yes is that you dream big and you do 15 minutes of just a brain dump of all the things you could do. And you're getting the editor out of your way. So that you can dream like a child. And then you go in and you pick the thing that is most exciting to you. And then people will be like, well, what if I pick the wrong thing? Well, my dad gave me the best advice when I was 13. And that was, you're going to make the best decision you can with the information you have at hand. And if you make a different decision in even 6 days, it's not because this one is wrong. It's because you have more information and you're making the best decision you can with that information you have at hand.
I love that.
I mean, he told me when I was 13. And so 30 years later, it's still the best advice I've ever gotten in my life. It stands the test of time. But the other thing is, if somebody's thinking, I really want to do this, but I'm scared about the money, because usually that's it, the money, go right now, as soon as this podcast is over, go open up a free bank account at like Synchrony or American Express Savings or Capital One, whatever it is. Name it severance package and start putting in, I don't know, $100 a week, whatever you feel like you can. And if you're doing a side hustle, like just put all that in there. And when you have whatever you feel comfortable with, 3 months, 6 months in that account, you can quit because you have given yourself a severance package now. And you have then 3 to 6 months to build a business up. Because when I lost my job and I said to Mark, I'm not going to look for another job, and his little engineer brain imploded, I said, babe, look, I've done the math, and it was May. It was 2 weeks after Mother's Day. And I said, if I don't make another penny from here forward, we run out of money on October 12th, which sounds terrifying when I put it that way. But I was like, look, we've got 5 months. And the likelihood of me not making another penny is so slim, because I'm not just going to sit down on the side of the road and just wish and hope. I'm going to get into action. I'm going to get clear on my yes, and I'm going to take micro actions towards it.
I love it. Thank you for both of those pieces of advice. Brilliant. What drives, motivates, and inspires you to keep going and excelling at all that you do, Bevan?
I mean, I think everybody says, oh, my kids. And it's true. My Again, my kids do, for sure. So the second half of my damn manifesto, which is all the whys, is I want to share this framework with as many people as possible in as many ways as possible in order to create a sustainable, thriving business that both supports and inspires my family and the world. And so my kids obviously are an inspiration. They're the reason I need to make the dollars. But I think I also am so inspired by the people that are impacted by the Do the Damn Thing method. I share a lot of my own personal stories through my work. And I do that because when we share our stories, we all feel a little less isolated and a little less alone. Yeah. And that to me is the inspiration, because when people hear the stories of what I've been through and what I've created, and they can see themselves in that story, or they can say, wow, look at everything she's overcome and what she's also created, then they can see themselves in that possibility too. And that 1,000%. To me, if I can just help people see possibility in their own lives, is it's my purpose.
That's a beautiful gift to give to people too. It truly is. It's amazing, because it is. It's all about that relatability factor. And by you sharing, standing up and sharing your stories, your struggles, what you've been through, that's a permission slip for others to realize, hey, I've gone through something similar, or I'm going through something similar. And if Bevan can do it, why the fuck can't I?
Exactly.
Now, I want to speak a little bit about your coaching journey. I've heard a lot of coaches, if not all of them, talk about the fact that they've all been through their personal struggles. And I mean, we're human beings. We all have been through our shit. But what I've found is most common through those conversations is that the coaches, their struggle or their journey was the catalyst for them stepping into the coaching world. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about your journey and your story that propelled you into the coaching world.
Okay. Yes. Perfect. So I actually, that is not true for me.
Of course it's not.
It kind of is, I guess. But so I actually started coaching back in 2008, 2009. I was going to be an entrepreneur. My $1 million idea was I was going to be a yoga instructor. And you have to do a lot of yoga to make $1 million. Like, you can do the math, but you're making like $7 per student per hour. A lot of yoga. But in that journey, I had a private client who was a coach. Okay. And so she said, hey, what if we exchanged and I'll pay you for private lessons and I'll coach you. And as we were coaching, she was helping me uncover what it is that I wanted, what it is that I didn't want, which was hilarious because I was uncovering a lot of the things I didn't want were the things that I was doing. And she had wanted to get pregnant. That's why she wanted private lessons. She did get pregnant. And then a year when she went back to work, she messaged me and she said, hey, just reaching out to see if there's anybody who might be interested in a coach. And I said, I want to do what you do. And so that is when I started coaching. It was 2008 or 2009. She coached me while I got my initial training. Then a whole bunch of shit happened. I had some stuff happen up till that point. My dad had passed away from cancer, things like that. But none of that really inspired me to become a coach.
Right.
But what was great is that having done the coaching work, having done the personal development work, then my home burned down in 2010. And so because I had already sort of done some of this coaching, I was able to navigate that more easily. And so then when everything happened in 2019 that went crazy, I lost my job. I know we're going to talk about the rest of that story in a minute. Yeah. That was the catalyst to take my coaching and create the Take the Damn Chance movement, the Do the Damn Thing method. So it was not the catalyst for me to start coaching, but it was the catalyst for me to get really clear and specific on how I coach and what I do differently than other coaches. Because there's, I don't even know how many coaches, hundreds of thousands of coaches, and we all resonate with the right coach for us at the right time. And that's for me is, okay, what is it that I do differently and helps me work with people in a specific way? All the hard stuff got me to that. In fact, that was exactly how it did, because all this crap happened. And then I looked back at all of the stuff I'd been through, losing my home in a house fire, fertility treatments, losing my job 3 times, and then all of these amazing things that I had also accomplished. And I looked at how had I navigated that? And that's when I created the Do the Damn Thing method.
And so how have all of these things compounded, helped shape the Bevan you are today, both personally and professionally?
I think one thing is I jokingly want to be like, oh, it hasn't, just because I've done that to you a million times today, but it definitely has. How can we not be a compilation, an amalgamation of everything we've been through? And I think what it has done is I'm able to sit with people in a way that has a lot of openness and empathy. And so I'm going to kind of jump forward in the story, but yeah. My husband passed away, and very unexpectedly. And my oldest daughter was 2.5 when it happened. And what it has taught me, everything that I've been through, she is such a shining example of this, because what it has taught me is the willingness to admit that there's no such thing as a bad emotion. We can feel them all. Yeah. We can attribute bad or good emotions to things. But I can sit with her and I can, when she's sad and says, I want daddy to come back, and I can say, it is okay to be sad. And we don't have to rush through this emotion, and we can do things to help us feel better. So I think going through so much stuff has shown me that we can all choose whether or not we want to be a victim. And I don't mean that in a Susie Sunshine, everything happens for a reason kind of way, because I don't believe that at all. But I do know that part of my training is in what's called the three principles, which is thought, mind, and consciousness. And I do know that we're never going to be able to choose what happens to us. And we can always choose how we respond. And we can always choose a different way to think about it, which is going to make us feel a different way. And I think that being thrown in the fire so many times of being tested around it, even recently, where it's like, oh, you believe that even when hard things happen, you can choose your role in the experience of your life. Yeah, I do. I do. I 100% do. I can cause myself way more pain and suffering when I think about missing my dad after he passed away, or I can shift how I think about it.
For sure. That's something that we all have to realize, is that we only have control over how we react to situations, and that's it.
Yeah.
And that's a choice.
It is a choice. And it's so funny because I just went to my grandfather's memorial service this weekend. He was 100 years and 11 months old when he passed
away. Wow.
Quite the life.
Yeah.
And that just brings up all the family dynamics, because however many of us are in a enclosed space. And I said something to one of my relatives, and I felt, oh my God, she responded really poorly. And then I was like, now she's mad and all this stuff. And I had to have my own little moment of, I can only control the things I say, do, and feel. And I cannot control her response. I can then control my response to her response.
Yes.
That makes sense. At first, it was like, oh, you're mad at me. And then as I've thought back about it, I'm like, that's my choice to even honestly care whether she's mad or not. But did I show up in integrity? Did I show up fully? Yes. Okay. Then I can deal with her however she's responding.
Yeah, it's important to remember that, though, for sure. What would you say are three of the most important lessons you've learned in your career as a coach?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that we're all creating our experience through the filter of our thinking. Mm-hmm. And that when we realize that, then we know we could change our thoughts in an instant. So our experience could change in an instant. And when we lose sight of that, then our thoughts can feel real and painful. I think that's a huge one. And again, when you ask about how things have shaped me personally and professionally, I think one of the things I've noticed for myself is that it's very aligned. I kind of am the same person at home as I am at work. So as you can see, as I'm sitting with my 7-year-old being like, let's talk about emotions. So that's been a huge thing. I think the other is, whatever we're going through, whatever you're going through right now, is the hardest thing, because it's the thing you're going through. And we can make ourselves feel better or worse depending on which way we are looking. So a lot of times when people hear my stories, they're like, oh, well, my life is nothing. The heart is nothing compared to what you've been through. And that's useless. It does not matter, because whatever somebody is going through is the hardest thing. And so I like to really honor that in my clients. And then I think the other one, and we just talked about it, is, well, I've got two. Can I have two more?
Yeah, sure.
So I already said the one, which is, there's no such thing as a bad emotion. So well, that one's already there. But I think the other thing is, in my coaching, is that a lot of people I work with are high achievers. They've accomplished a lot. A lot of times they're in high positions, and they're not often in a space where somebody speaks truth to them. And so I think one of the things that I can do most powerfully for my clients is speak truth to them. And I've heard one of my coaching colleagues has said years ago that coaching is just holding a mirror and a flashlight. Mm-hmm. And so holding up to our clients a mirror to help them see themselves more clearly, both the good and the bad. Maybe there's places where they're not seeing all that they've accomplished. And then holding a flashlight to help them see the next steps.
Love that. That is brilliant. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. How has your coaching style evolved from when you first started to where you are now?
I think it was very formulaic when I first started, as most coaches are. I think if you get any sort of training as a coach, and some people don't, but if you get any sort of training as a coach, you follow a formula when you first start. And I think now my style, I'm much more confident that when I first started as a coach, I thought there was a there. I thought I've got to get somebody there. And now I'm much more confident that we'll get somewhere, right? I'm not trying to get anybody to a specific outcome, a specific result, but we will get somewhere and we'll get where we need to be.
What lights you up or inspires you the most about the work you do as a coach?
Man, just knowing, I mean, everything I've talked about so far, but just seeing people's eyes light up when they start to see, oh, wow, I can go after this dream, this goal that maybe other people have questioned in the past. And also just the hearing the stories from people, maybe not during the exact time that we've worked together, but the 6 months later, they call and they say, oh my gosh, you will never believe what just happened. And I love that. I love it. So I also think just the fact that I get to do what I do lights me up, that I get to be on stages and speak to incredible people and inspire people and get them into action and see results. Like, everything about that lights me up.
And that's what life's about, is finding that thing that lights you up.
Yeah.
And when you find that, your whole life just changes. It's absolutely incredible and so inspiring. What, in your opinion, is one of the most important, or the most important, quality or skill set in a coach?
Oof. Well, okay. I mean, it depends on the type of coach. And I like to draw the distinction between coach, consultant, and counseling. So I think one of the most important things for coaches is to remember that it's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about my ego. It's honestly not even about my opinion. It's not about my results. It is about the person who is in front of you and your willingness to sit with that person. And again, mirror and flashlight, but listen to what they're saying, reflect that back to them and help them see possibility. And so I think it is a blend of letting it not be about you as a coach, and also the willingness to be wrong, the willingness to explore. It's the willingness to not have all the answers and not need to.
That's a good quality, a very important quality in leadership as well.
Yes.
For sure. What would you say is your greatest strength as a coach?
One of my first clients called what I do laughter coaching. And
okay.
I said, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so perfect, because I don't make light of people's situations, but I like to bring light to them. And so even in my keynotes, when I talk about my keynotes, when I'm speaking with an event planner, I was like, I'm going to talk about people dying. I'm going to talk about my house burning down. I'm going to talk about miscarriages. I'm going to talk about all, but I'm talking about it with a lot of humor, which they're like, I don't know how you do that. And I said, well, I've had to figure it out, because when we are laughing, our whole body is open. Our chest is more open, our eyes, our ears, everything. And when that's happening, we can hear. But when we're closed off, when we're scared, we're anxious, we're nervous, we're bored, you can think about it. When you cross your arms and you're like, just think about sitting in a conference and you're crossing your arms because you're bored and you don't really want to be there. How much are you actually hearing of what the person is saying?
None, because you're focused on how you're feeling.
Right.
You're not listening. You're not paying attention.
Right. And so even in my coaching, when I'm talking about really heavy stuff, I work with people who've lost a spouse or been through fertility treatments, lost jobs. I'm not coming in being like, let's tell some jokes, but I am trying to help them bring a little levity to it. Because once I see that, then I know they can hear what I'm going to say next.
Love it. Very important. What is the process in your mind that best supports leadership development?
Besides mine? I'm just kidding. Mine. Everybody should come to my process.
Laughter.
Doing the damn thing. I think what supports leadership development, I think both as a leader, as somebody who wants to be a better leader and somebody who's also like guiding leaders, I think that it's a couple of things. I think a lot of it is sort of self-reflection and self-awareness. What are you good at? What do you love doing? Again, for me, this comes back to what's your yes. But then it's also with the process, again, my process, right? So like the second step of my process is to find your damn people, which is really critical when it comes to leadership. And so what I tell people and what I teach is that in every important area of your life, you need three people. You need a path partner, a guide or a mentor, and a beacon of inspiration. And so if you as a person are wanting to develop your leadership skills better, you need to find a path partner, which is somebody who's walking the path at about the same place you are. You need to find a guide or a mentor, somebody who can shine the flashlight and help you find your next steps, a coach, that's a lot of what I do usually, and a beacon of inspiration, somebody who inspires you and you're like, that's the type of leader I want to be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I think people get confused and think, I just need a mentor. And that's not enough because we try to put too much on that mentor. And instead of saying, okay, that person is my mentor and that person is guiding me to where I want to go. And this person is another fellow leader, another who's starting on the journey. And I can bounce ideas off of this person. Whereas we don't necessarily want to go to our mentor and be like, I don't know how to fill out my paperwork. Obviously, they're probably a little further along, but yes. I don't know where to find this next step. That's mm-hmm. your path partner. That's okay. Do you know how to do this? Your mentor is really helping you get further down the path, but you also don't want to turn to your new buddy and be like, what would you do in this situation if mm-hmm. you really want to strengthen your leadership? Because they don't know. So I think that's it. We got to cultivate a tribe, a squad around us and put the right people in the right places, but have the people.
I love that. And I think it's very important that you brought that up because we need the right people around us. We need like-minded people around us as well. We need to surround ourselves with community and like-minded people who have the same thoughts and similar mm-hmm. beliefs because you can't do this alone. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You
similar
need the
experiences.
Support.
Yeah. I mean, so I use this example a lot when I'm talking about this because so with parenting, when I say I use the do the damn thing method in every area of my life, I really do. And so with parenting, when I think about the three people that I need to have and three types of people or allies that we need to have around us, I, for a long time, have a lot of mom friends, but what I didn't have was mom friends with young children. And so these mom friends of mine who had teenagers, preteens, older, were really good beacons of inspiration or maybe yeah. mentors, but they weren't the path partners that I needed. And so I consciously found a group of women that was like, hey, our daughters are in first grade together at the same school. Can we go have dinner? Because I needed people where I didn't have to explain what it was like to have three kids or to have a first grader. And it's really critical. So when I teach people about this, find your damn people, I have something called the 9 method. Everything is an acronym for me. But the first thing is to assess your needs. Like, mm-hmm. what is it that you need? And then you invite people into that and you keep doing this whole process until you have the tribe that you need.
Your vibe attracts your tribe.
Yeah. Yes, it does. And we also still have to do some invitations, right?
Yes,
because that's when people are like, oh, I'm going to attract the right people. It's sure. But you also need to be willing to say, I would like to have a conversation with you, whether that's your people or your clients or relationships. Like, we always have to be willing to put ourselves out there.
For sure. Obviously, through the work you do, you work with CEOs, leaders, innovative minds in leadership. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what the difference is, in your opinion, between an expert, leadership, and thought leadership.
Okay. So I think an expert is somebody who has honed their craft. They've spent the time getting better at something, putting the work in, if you will. And you can be an expert in business. You can be an expert in singing. You can be an expert, whatever it is. But an expert is somebody who is mastering a skill. Leadership, I think, is people who are willing to guide others. You can't be a leader if you don't have followers, right? So it's people who have the ability to inspire others to follow them mm-hmm. and the willingness to lead, to guide. Thought leadership, I think, are people who are willing to inspire other people to lead themselves. And so they're really, they are helping craft thoughts and supporting even other higher level thinking. They're inspiring new ideas, not as a way of do it exactly this way. Because a lot of times when you're a leader, that's what you're trying to do is you're showing people, you're the Pied Piper, right? You're trying to show people where to go. But thought leadership is, I'm just now thinking about this. Thought leadership is you can go further. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to show you exactly the way there, but I'm going to show you how to start leading yourself because I know that you can go further. I know that you are meant for more.
Thank you for that. Now, of course, executive roles can be quite demanding. How do you help leaders that you work with prevent and overcome burnout, ensuring that they maintain a sustainable and fulfilling leadership journey?
Some of this goes right back to what we were talking about. Prioritization is finding that yes, finding their own damn manifesto and saying, okay, this is the thing. This is my yes. This is my core yes. When we talk about working with teams doing the same thing, it's like, this is the rallying cry. And we're using this as a way to say no to things because where we get burnt out is where we feel like we can never say no. And what I like to remind leaders and everyone is that every yes carries implied no's with it. When you say yes to a project, a consulting gig, whatever it is, you're automatically saying no to other things, just other projects you can take on, but time with your kids, time by yourself, whatever it is. And so when you know that, like for all of us who are scared to say no, when we know that every yes has no's, and then we can say, well, where's my yes? And we just get really clear on that. So that's one thing is just really saying, what's my damn manifesto? What's my yes? And then delegating and asking for help in particular. I'm going to make a generalization, but women were really not so great at asking for help and delegating. So being willing to do that, women are far more likely to donate their time than their money. Mm-hmm. And we got to start valuing our time and asking for the help to support what we need, and then giving ourselves some grace.
Boundaries.
A lot of grace. A lot of grace. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, women always, growing up, being raised by women myself, seeing my mom, my grandmother, and always putting everyone else first, putting themselves on the back burner. Always. Yeah. As mothers, as women, this is an incredibly common trait. And again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is that if you continue to do that, you're not going to be able to be in and of service to anyone, least of all your family and the people around you.
Right.
Least of all, actually yourself, then the people around you.
Yeah. Because I mean, our bodies are just going to keep getting louder.
Yeah,
so we think, oh, I can just keep pushing. I can just keep pushing. My sister just called me the other day and told me this. She's been like, go. She's got a high stress job. She's got a teenager. We're moving my mom into a senior living community. And we went on this trip to my grandfather's memorial service. And she got back and I called her. I'm like, how was your day off? She was like, I'm sick. And I was like, okay. She's like, I'm really sick. I said, yeah, your body was like, you have not been listening.
Screaming at you. Yep.
You have been working at capacity and you have not been listening. So now I'm going to make you really sick so that you have to stop.
Yeah. You have no choice but to listen.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. So we've been talking about doing the damn thing, take the damn chance. Let's jump into all of this now. Let's get into this. So you are the founder of Take the Damn Chance Movement. Can you tell us what the inspiration was behind starting this movement? What is the focus of it? What's it all about? Tell us all the things.
All the things. Do we have another hour? I'm just kidding. So we've kind of alluded to a little bit of it, but as I mentioned in 2019, I lost my job and decided I was going to start my own business. I was not going to go look for another job and grew that business. My husband and I, he was very supportive of me. And so I started working on that business. I said, if I can make $5,000 by the end of August, then we'll consider this viable and we'll keep going. Because 2 weeks before I'd gotten laid off, he had surprised me with tickets to France for my 40th birthday, which was going to be in November. And so immediately we're like, we should totally cancel this trip. But we said, okay, let's just see what happens. Mark had bought travel insurance, which we never did. But so we were like, let's just see how things go. And so by the time we were ready to leave for the trip, I had made $35,000 in the business already.
Wow.
And so was feeling really good.
We're going
about
to fucking France.
Right? We're going to France. We're leaving the kids behind and we're going to France. That was kind of our response.
Yeah.
Although we actually did say even like the day before, this is crazy. We should just not go. Like we're going to be in planes the same amount of time we're on the ground. But we decided to go, went, had this amazing time in Bordeaux. Neither of us had ever been there before. Wandered through the city, drinking amazing wine and eating incredible food and got back from that trip. Like even in that trip, Mark said to me, I feel like I'm reconnecting with the real you. We were connecting to who we were before we had kids and got married and had these stressful jobs. And so we came back and it was the week of Thanksgiving and Mark had taken the entire week off work. We got ready around the house. We took our daughter to her first movie theater show and had 25 people come for Thanksgiving because it was pre-pandemic when that was a thing. Yeah. And the day after Thanksgiving, I went upstairs to wake up Mark and he had passed away in the middle of the night.
Wow.
Just completely unexpectedly, he had undiagnosed heart disease. One of his arteries was 95% blocked and another was 50% blocked. And so all of a sudden, I was the solo parent to two kids under the age of three with a business that was growing, but it had not yet stood the test of time, sole financial provider. And I'm doing all of it without the love of my life and my best friend and the person who was my biggest cheerleader. By yeah. my side.
And now having to deal with the fucking grief.
And going through the grief. Yeah. The unimaginable grief. And so when people will say, how did you get through that? I mean, that's where I said I had distilled it down to my yes and my why. And my yes was keep my kids healthy and safe, keep myself healthy and safe, keep our home. That was it. And so about a month after that, I made a post on Facebook talking about the trip and losing Mark and my birthday. And I ended that by saying, look, whenever you're faced with a choice, just take the damn trip. And that really resonated with people. And I started to get a bunch of messages from people that were saying, oh, I had this amazing experience with my dad right before he passed away and it meant the world to me. Or I was going to say no to this trip, but now I'm going to say yes. And more importantly, I started to talk to people about not waiting to go after that dream that's in our hearts, the one that we keep pushing to the side. And so at that point, I started looking back at all of the hard things that I've been through. Like I said, my house burned down in 2010. I lost my dad to cancer when I was 24. My kiddos are IVF babies. So we've been through years of fertility treatments and a miscarriage. I looked at all of that, losing my job three times, looked at all of that. And then I looked at the most amazing things that I have created. So having those kiddos, building our dream home on the river, growing my business. Like I said, I grew it from zero to $300,000 in 18 months while grieving the loss of my husband and in the middle of a pandemic. And I asked myself, what is it that I do differently than other people? Not better, not worse, but differently to help me navigate these situations with some grace and creativity. And that's where I started formulating the DAMN framework. And so it does stand for something. We've just been saying it a lot, but it stands for decide and declare, attend your own party, moments, not minutes, and now is the time. And so everything I've talked about today fits into one of those things. We decide our yes and we declare our why. We attend our own party, meaning we think we realize our own thoughts and our own filters. We're focused on the moments. We get into action in the now. And so that's where the Take the Damn Chance movement came because I stopped saying take the damn trip because people thought I was a vacation planner. So it's really about taking the chance on yourself. And the do the damn thing method is bringing that all together. And so it has really three steps, which is you craft your damn manifesto, you find your damn people, and you get your damn results. And you can apply this to anything: health, parenting, relationships, dating, business, everything, writing a book, building a house, everything that is in your life. You can craft a damn manifesto, find your damn people, and get your damn results. And is now the only thing I teach and talk about. Whether I'm talking to a leader or a business owner or a banking conference, I'm always talking about the do the damn thing method.
Well, you hear so many people say that are working, and I'm just using corporate as an example.
Yeah.
You hear people say, well, I'll travel when I retire. I'll travel. I'll do this when I retire. I'll do that when I retire. You're not promised that retirement. So no. You're right. Do the fucking damn thing. Take the damn
You
chance.
Took it it's, to a whole new level.
Well, it's true though. I mean, so many people say that you're not promised tomorrow. You don't know. You don't, even if you are around then, you don't know that you'll be in good enough health to do the traveling. So right. Do it now. Why do we have to wait till we're retired to go take that trip to Paris or go take that trip to Scotland or Ireland or wherever it is? Take
or any of the things. Any of the things, right? I mean, my dad
start the fucking business.
Right, write the book. So I guess I skipped a big part of the story. But so my dad passed away when he was 64 and I thought that was young. And then when my husband passed away at 40, I was like, holy crap, like that's insane. So when I say like I use this in all the different areas of my life, I really mean it. And so in 2020, I had to think about my biggest, boldest dream, which was that Mark and I said my kiddos are IVF babies. And so Mark and I had been about 60 days away from starting our next round of IVF when he passed away. And so I had to sit here and think, okay, what is it that I want in my life? What is the thing that if I don't do it when I turn 85 and I look back on my life, that's going to be the thing that I regret? And that was having our third kid. And so I said, that's my damn manifesto. And I found the damn people that I needed. And in July of 2021, I gave birth to Mark's and my third child 20 months after he passed away. Mm. And so I had the damn baby. It's really powerful. Once you see these things in your life, you can't unsee them.
Yeah. Once you ring that bell, you can't unring it.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that and sharing your vulnerability. Yeah. Also, you are an author. So I would love for you to speak about the book. Tell us about the title. And I know it's got damn in it.
You're going to be really shocked. You're going to be really shocked when you hear the title of this.
Tell us all about it.
So it's called Your Damn Manifesto. And it is the first step in my process of the Do the Damn Thing method. It is not the book that I was initially writing. I'm actually working on that book now. And the book that hopefully will come out in the next year or two is more memoir based. And it's more the story of the fire, losing Mark, having my daughter. And that I don't know how I will fit the word damn into the title unless it's just damn.
There you go. That's what you
just
said.
I'm just calling it right now. Is like, damn.
That's the title right there. Damn. D-A-Y-U-M.
Yeah. I tell people that, like, that's your barometer. Is if something's like, damn, that's hard, go away from that. And if it's, damn, that's amazing, go to that. And if it's just, damn, like a full body, damn, listen to that. That's your barometer that you should be paying attention. So it's called Your Damn Manifesto, and it's about unlocking the keys to your biggest dreams. And the reason I wrote it is because I wanted my methodology to be really accessible to people. And not everybody can afford to hire me as a coach. Not everybody can afford to hire me as a keynote speaker or is at a conference where I'm speaking. But this is a way that if somebody's just like, how do I get started? You pick up that book and it walks you through crafting your damn manifesto. That is the foundational piece. That is the touchstone that you will come back to again and again when things get hard. And they always get hard.
Of course. Absolutely. What do you think your unique skill set or superpower is that's helped you become successful?
Besides being really good at crafting a good acronym, I think my friend would say my superpower is like making friends out of strangers, which I don't, as I was thinking about this, I was like, that's still kind of it, because I think that one of my superpowers is the willingness to sit with people, to hear their stories, my willingness to really openly share my story. And so that willingness to be super vulnerable. And look, I don't share every single story that's ever happened to me in my life. And I don't think anyone has to do that. But my deep desire to connect with people.
Speaking of success, how do you define that word? What does success mean to you?
Oh boy. I don't actually know that I have an answer for that. I mean, I think it pivots. I think it changes. I think on a day that was maybe a little rough, my definition of success, that my kids still want to hug me at the end of the day. That success, I think that comes to the moments, not the minutes. Like, it's what are the moments that really mean something for us? There's lots of things I want to do in life. I mean, I've done a lot of them. I had my TEDx talk. I deliver keynotes. I've done a lot of those things. But I think maybe my best definition of success, since I've now danced around it for 2 minutes. Okay. So the same thing I had when I said, what is the thing I want to do? Is that when I get to be 85 or whatever year, whatever age it is that we look back on our lives, I'm not looking back and saying, that's the thing I wish I'd done. I'm just saying, you know what? I continually check in with myself of what are the things I want? What are the things I want to create? And then I go after them. And even if they don't work out the way that I hoped, that doesn't mean I failed.
For sure. What would you say is one of the most important things you've learned in your life? And what was your life like before you learned it? And what was your life like after learning it?
I think it's that advice that my dad gave me when 13. I mean, I've learned a lot of important things in my life, but I had gotten an offer of a scholarship to a boarding school and I didn't know whether or not to go. And we talked about it for 3 hours. And at the end, he just said, Bevan, you're going to make the best decision you can with the information that you have at hand. And if you make a different decision, it's not because this decision is wrong. And I use that all the time. I don't really remember what my life was like much before 13, but I'm sure I was screwing up an awful lot. But after that, I mean, even yesterday, I had this conversation with my mom because she's moving and she said, I just don't know if it's the right decision. And I said, well, mom, all we can do is make the best decision we can and then go from there. And I gave her all these examples. I had to have surgery once. And I was like, I don't know if this is the right decision or not, but we don't have a crystal ball. So we're going to go here. Yeah. And everything is just knowing that we can make whatever information we have at hand. And if you don't feel confident yet to make decision, just get more information. But then just make a decision. And there are very few decisions that you can't pivot.
Very true. Yeah, just because you choose to go one way does not mean that you have to stay on that path. You can change your mind. That's okay.
Yeah. I mean, look, you can split up with a partner that you thought was the right choice and they're not. I mean, you can change jobs. You can move houses. I used to say there's nothing you can't walk back on except having kids. But if you really wanted to, I don't recommend this, but if you really wanted to, you could give your kids up for adoption. Again, I don't recommend that, but there's no decision that we make that we can't then pivot or tweak in the future. Now, your listeners are going to be like, so she lets her kids eat cereal and iPads in the morning, and she said she would give them up for adoption. So to be clear, that is not what I said.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, we'll just be very clear on that. Bevan, what is one of your biggest failures or life lessons or teachable moments, whatever you want to call it, and what did you learn from it?
So I think that when we think we've failed at something, it's because we've gotten too wrapped up in the how as opposed to focusing on the what and the why. So again, I just did a training about this yesterday. We can feel like a failure if we had this vision of how it had to work out. But what I will say is that for a long period of life, I was really terrible with money. And I don't often talk about this, but I filed bankruptcy and like all this. And I was really upset about that. And I really beat myself up about it. And that was prior to me understanding how we can change our thinking about things. But I still think of that. That feels like a failure. And what I did from that was I said, I'm going to learn as much as I can about money. And I'm going to learn how to save it, make it, invest it, all of these things. And so I did what I was talking about here. I like found a couple path partners. Like I joined this program where it was all about learning how to be financially fearless. And there was a guide and a mentor in that. And there were like people that inspired me. And I think that completely changed my relationship with money in seeing that it's just, there's not any emotions attached to it. It's just
energy.
An exchange. Yeah. It's I mean, I say it's because it got too tedious to walk chickens over for cows. It's just got easier to like, right, here's $25 for two chickens and here's $50 for a cow. But the reason I bring that one up is because it's not the last time I've had money situations. And even last year, in a very weird, strange turn of events, I had a bunch of money stolen from me. And I was like, okay, now what I learned is it's my thinking. I can change my thoughts, even though this is not going the way that I want it to. Is my next decision in service of my damn manifesto, which is to support and inspire my family? No, it's not. So let me find a new decision. And then yes, this one is. And so I think that learning and that willingness to learn and to explore has just changed, again, like changed the way I view money, but also changed the way I view learning. And that was a big inspiration for the people that you need to find. Is you can't just have a guide or a mentor. You got to have other people on the path and you got to have people to inspire you.
What does the word empowerment mean to you?
I think when we think about empower, it's really creating an environment to give power, if that makes sense. And so some of it is creating an environment to give power to myself. Mm-hmm. So empowering myself is giving myself the agency to make decisions, but then also how we empower others. I talk about my kids in this a lot, especially my oldest daughter, because she's really the one who gets this so far, but I'm empowering her to make decisions. I'm creating an environment.
Even if she's wearing soccer socks.
Even if she's wearing soccer socks and heart printed pants. No. Okay. Most recently, soccer socks, floral bell bottoms, and a velour. It's already sounds great. a velour star printed sweatshirt.
I love it. The bell
bottoms. She's been empowered. She has been empowered to do that. But it's just creating space where people can then step into their own power.
Okay, we're going to jump into a little rapid fire section here. So the next grouping questions just be 2-3-4 word answer type thing. What is one of your favorite quotes?
Everything will be okay in the end. If it's not the end, if it's not okay, it's not the end.
What's one thing you want but cannot buy with money?
I mean, people would probably know this. I wish my husband could see my daughter big. She says that. She's like, Daddy never got to see me big. And I wish for her sake that he could see her big.
If you could teach the world one thing, what would it be?
Do the damn thing.
Of course.
That was the easiest one.
How would you describe yourself in one word?
Hilarious. I don't know. I only get to pick one. I'll go with that.
All right. That's okay. What is one thing you love about yourself that is not related to your physical appearance?
My laugh.
What is your favorite self-care practice?
Sleep.
And that concludes our rapid fire section. Now back to our regularly scheduled program.
I did a really good job of not doing more than.
You did. You did good. So I started this new thing where I just throw a question and you don't know what it is. I'm trying to think of a name for it. For right now, I'm calling it the money question. I got to come up with a better name. But if you were ice cream, what flavor would you be and why?
Ooh, if I was ice cream, I'm trying not to just pick my favorites. I would be a banana split sundae. Little over the top. Okay. You got a little healthy, but you cover it with some like sweetness, a little over the top, but everybody can find something they like in it.
Okay. All right.
I feel pretty good about that answer. I like it. Yeah.
If you could step into my shoes, what question would you have asked yourself that I didn't ask you?
You ask really good questions, so I don't really have a specific one, but it's going to be the biggest dead air. I would ask about the next book.
Okay. Tell me about the next book. That's your question. You had to know that.
I know, that's why I had to pick a really good question and not one that was I didn't want to answer. So yeah, the next book, like I said, is much more a memoir story. So when I first started out to write the book, I call it the big book. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I wanted to write a memoir. I'm not famous. I was like, who's going to want to hear this story? And so I wrote Your Damn Manifesto, which is a good book. It's good. It's a very teaching, easily digestible book. But it's not the story I wanted to tell. And what had to shift in me is that what I was trying to tell when I first started writing the book was the story of me and Mark, which is a really beautiful love story. And I was really uncomfortable with letting myself be the main character of the story. And what I had to do over the months when I was not writing the book was say, no, my story starts in 2010 when my home burned down. Yeah. And maybe even a little bit before that when my dad passed away from cancer. And then I met Mark, and then we knew we were going to have to do IVF and all of these things. And so I'm really, that book is, I mean, it's in process right now, but it's like, I read it and I'm like, damn. And I'm excited to share this story with the world because it's not about teaching, but I think that people will learn a lot.
There are teachable moments.
Yeah. So there's all these different types of books people can write. And one of them is called a teaching memoir, which is like, anything that Hay House has published is like a teaching memoir.
Yeah.
And when I talked to people in publishing at first, they were like, well, it's got to be a teaching memoir. And I'm like, I don't want to pull the teaching moments out of this. I think we learn so much from story and we're inspired by story. Yeah. And that's all I want to do is just tell the stories. You're not going to see at the end of the chapter me be like, and this is why we can't control what happens to us. So I'm excited about it. And I really want this one to be traditionally published. And so that's why I think it'll take a little longer to get into the world.
Love it. Looking forward to it. If you had the opportunity to sit down and have a 1-hour conversation with one woman, any woman in the world, who would it be and why?
Living or dead?
Either or.
Okay. I was thinking about this one. So my standard answer on this is Ellen DeGeneres. And that is because I love how she uses humor and kindness as well. And I also really wanted to be on her show. And now her show doesn't exist and all of that. But if it was like, Bevan, you can pick any time, any place, living or dead, then I would want to be able to come back and have a conversation with my daughter, my daughters, but my daughter, when, I don't know, when she's a grandma or when she's a mom, and just talk to her and find out what shaped her and what she's learned.
I love that answer. That's beautiful. If you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
And it can't be do the damn thing.
It can be whatever you want.
Now, if I were going back, I think I would tell myself that it's not going to look the way you think it is, but it's still going to be pretty damn good.
Lastly, if you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, your tribe, your people, your corner of the world, what would that last 30 seconds sound like? What words of impact would you share?
This is how I end my keynote. Okay. So it's, we never know what's going to happen to us at any moment, any instant, what's going to happen to us, our family, our house. That's not a reason to live scared. It is a reason to live fully. And none of the risks that we have in our lives that are so worth going after, none of them will pay off until you take the damn chance on yourself.
Beautifully said. Wonderful way to end the interview. Bevan, thank you so much for taking and making the time to be here with me today. The conversation has been an absolute pleasure. I've enjoyed every minute of it. Lots of laughs, lots of wisdom and knowledge and doing the damn thing. I love it. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I'm so grateful to have you as a member of the Empowerography community. Thank you for doing all the beautiful work that you do.
My pleasure and my honor. Thank you for having me.
Once again, my name is Brad Walsh, host of your Empowerography podcast. Today, my guest has been Bevan Farron. She is an executive coach, a speaker, an author, the founder of the Take the Damn Chance movement, the creator of the Do the Damn Thing method, and last but certainly not least, a mother. Thank you so much, Bevan. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't yet, please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share with all your friends. You can find me at viseuphoria.ca and follow me on Instagram at Empowerography Podcast and on Facebook at Empowerography. Please join me next time for another inspirational story from yet another amazing woman.